Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
Emotional support animals, where do we stand on these? We have an employee who has been struggling with her mental health and anxiety for some time. She arrived at work this week with a cat carry case, saying that her therapist had said she benefits from having an emotional support animal and wants them with her at all times.
An employee has the right to reasonable adjustments. It only has to be reasonable. What are the competing arguments? So we've got employees potentially with allergies. There's a potential hygiene issue. If one of them escapes, what chaos is that going to cause? Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Hero software and employment law consultancy services.
Let's go! Episode 26 of the HRER podcast.
One you've been waiting for a long time.
Yeah, the smelly cats. It's a bit more in depth than that, but The basic problem was there were some cats that were a bit smelly. And
so for our avid listeners, the reason why Ollie is so excited about this one is because
I've recently become a cat dad.
I can't believe you said cat dad. I thought you were going to say cat parent. I didn't think you were going to go with cat dad.
I've never said that to you, have I? I've never said that.
No, you haven't.
That's a recent thing. I'm a cat dad. Yeah, I'm cringing at myself saying that. But
we'll talk about it at your appraisal. Under the section of judgment.
Yeah.
I'm a dog person, not a cat person.
You've had cats.
I grew up with cats, but they were really strange. They were Siamese.
Oh.
So not real cats.
Are they the ones that have like really long legs?
Long legs.
Weird kind of, face. It's a bit Egyptian-y.
They look like they've got masks on.
Yeah, they're cool, man.
And they have blue eyes.
Yeah.
But evil things. So I had two Alsatians, so two German Shepherds growing up.
Yeah.
And you'd come home from school and there'd be a cat in each bed and the dog's like cowering in the corner.
Really?
Honestly, they were horrible things. Wow. They were awful.
The cat's obviously made it onto my algorithm. And I saw a video of a Siamese cat. So you know when you open the dishwasher and the heat comes out, he was warming his legs on it.
You're smiling like that's cute. I'd be like, what you're about to do to the dishwasher.
Yeah,
like,
he's going to go in there and he's going to mess some stuff up.
Yeah. Anyway.
We digress. Let's read the email, shall we, about these smelly cats. Hi, Alyssa. Emotional support animals, where do we stand on these? We have an employee who has been struggling with her mental health and anxiety for some time. She arrived at work this week with a cat carry case, saying that her therapist had said she benefits from having an emotional support animal and wants them with her at all times. We have staff who have complained, saying they are allergic to cats, and that as there is no litter box or ability for them to go anywhere, as they can't be let loose, that the box smells really bad. What can we do? It's becoming a real distraction in work. As you know, we are not customer facing, so it doesn't impact clients, but it's becoming a real pain with other employees.
I mean, I had to read this one twice when it came in.
A bit far out, isn't it?
It is, and it came in while I was in the office. So this was one immediately said, oh my God, you're not going to believe this.
Everyone got a cat
query. It's very rarely in employment law do we deal with things around pets. So really interesting one because we cover a few themes in this. We've got someone who's struggling with anxiety and depression long term. So likely to be caught by the Equality Act as a disabled person. So we have to be looking at things like making reasonable adjustments, treating this person fairly. But then we also have the competing health and safety interests of people with allergies. Now, people who've got pet allergies, it can be quite severe. So I've got a family member who has got a cat allergy. Why my mother then decided to buy two Siamese cats, I'll never know. But daily antihistamines, when he comes over to my house, as a cuddle with the dogs, it's like pops one before he comes because he knows as much as he loves the dogs and he really is a dog person, that he knows his face is going to swell, he's going to be all blocked up, streaming.
It's
rough. So when you've got someone who's working with that, you know, with those kinds of symptoms, it's like, really bad hay fever. It's the kind of thing that can make someone unwell for work. And also the general health and safety environment with having what sounds like in this situation, a urine-soaked cat carrier.
Yeah, it doesn't smell nice, you know, surprisingly.
Shocker.
Who knew?
Yeah. So a few things to unpick here. We've got the competing interests of the employee who says, you know, I need this for my health and for me to be able to come to work, versus the comfort of everybody else in the workplace, and then obviously the people who've got allergies when it comes to the pets. So lots to kind of go through here. And a really good example, actually, of when we can talk about what a reasonable adjustment is. So we've talked about that in podcasts before, that when we've got someone with a disability and we have to make reasonable adjustments, and we often hypothesize about what's reasonable and what isn't. But this is one where we can really kind of get into the nitty gritty of that.
First question. How should staff approach hygiene concerns with their fellow staff member? And how can HR professionals approach this issue in the workplace without any conflict kind of generating?
So when we're talking about I suppose we're jumping the gun a little bit there. We probably need to talk about if the cats have to stay, how we then combat that in terms
of... they have to stay?
Yeah, so if they have to stay...
So they don't have to be there?
Well, that's what we'll get to the bottom of first, okay, I think, is okay. whether the cats have to be there or not. Because if the cats have to stay, we then have a hygiene issue that we're going to have to address.
Stinky.
Don't we? Because, you know, we've got them in this carrier. So yeah, in this situation... I think there were three or four in the cat carrier. This wasn't one cat.
Okay.
There were a few of them in there. And she had a letter from, I can't remember if it was a doctor or a therapist, basically saying, you know, emotional support animals are going to really, really kind of support my patient. It's something that is going to be beneficial for them. So we've got a doctor's opinion or medical professional's opinion that this is something that's going to help alleviate this person's anxiety. As we know, when we've got someone with a disability and there are any barriers to their workplace, we have to try and make reasonable adjustments to alleviate that barrier.
Okay.
This person's saying, because of my depression and anxiety, I find it really hard to come into work. I find it really hard to do my work in the day. And my disability is therefore a barrier to my performance and my attendance at work. These cats, these support animals... are a reasonable adjustment because they help alleviate that barrier.
Okay.
So in principle, it sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
Do we have to comply? Is the next question. So as hopefully we all know by now, an employee has the right to reasonable adjustments. It only has to be reasonable. So we're back to our favourite word, reasonable. So an employee has the right to request them. As an employer, we then consider whether they're reasonable or not. And our duty as an employer is to put the reasonable adjustments in place. Mm-hmm. And it's not actually on the employee. We don't have to wait for the employee to come up with them either. We should be proactive in considering what can we put in place. So in this situation where we've got this barrier that's going to be alleviated through the support animals, what are the competing arguments? So we've got employees potentially with allergies. There's a potential hygiene issue. If one of them escapes... What chaos is that going to cause?
You ever tried to catch a cat, like when it's running away from you?
Yes.
Not easy.
It's not easy.
It's not easy.
If all three or four of them escape, what level of chaos are we going to experience? The distraction generally by having animals in the workplace, is our insurance okay with this? Is it our building as an employer? Will our landlord kick off if we've got animals in the workplace that could potentially do stuff on the carpet or to the wall? So, you know, you've got a cat, they like to scratch furniture. And
everything but like the scratch post that they should scratch.
Exactly. And yeah. You know where they've been on the floor? So my brother and his wife have had this situation, probably shouldn't show this because they're going to want to try and sell the house, where there's a big patch of carpet where the cat's kind
just
of gone to town.
Revving.
Like, this is where I'm going to do this. So there's lots of issues here where... And you can see where I'm going with this is it a reasonable adjustment? And the conclusion that we came to here was that actually it probably wasn't.
It does seem a bit far out.
Yeah, that we're going to be saying, unfortunately, this is not something that we can accommodate, but we can look at things like occupational health referral to look at therapy or other ways that we can support you and alleviate your anxiety. If we'd come to the other conclusion, so say, for example, we're a super modern, very, very inclusive, anything goes kind of workplace where we sit on beanbags and we use slides to get between all the different floors on a building, and it's a very jolly place to work. And yet, you know, bring your emotional support animal into work if you want. That's fine with us. Then we've got to think about the hygiene issues and that perspective. I'd be saying on this one, it's one of those where I'd get a bit of a slopey shoulder and go, do you have a health and safety contact that you can call?
What do you mean by a slopey shoulder?
Slopey shoulder, it's not my problem. It's an emergency services thing. We love that in the R&I, slopey shoulders. Do you have a health and safety contact? Let's bring them in for a consult, because it's not my job to advise you about how we can mitigate the hygiene issues presented by having emotional support animals on the premises.
We spoke about this before a bit, didn't we? But I think the cats is a funny animal to have as an emotional support.
It is. It's something that I did a bit of research on as well, and it kind of factored into my response to the employer as well. I hadn't realised the emotional support animal thing was really a thing, or was as much of a thing as it's a thing. In America, it's huge as well. So a lot of the examples that I looked at were American companies where I think there was someone with an emotional support peacock, someone with an emotional support snake. You know, you name it, someone's trying to bring it into work or wants to travel with it. Reptiles, there's a real kind of theme around that in some sort of pockets of America. And where it's hit the news predominantly is with airlines and travel companies, where someone wants to travel with their emotional support animal and they want it in the cabin, in the aircraft.
I've seen on my algorithm cats on airplanes, like next to...
This is after we were talking about not being bombarded with adverts for that dreadful film Snakes on a Plane, because let's face it, that's where this is going. And airlines have taken a very strict approach on this. So they're generally well accustomed to dogs typically being able to fly, where you've got them where they support people who are visually impaired, or where you've got them where they can sense if someone's going to have, say, an epileptic fit or something
crazy
like that.
That's,
you know, crazy,
yeah.
crazy intelligence that they have with these animals.
And they are really smart. Dogs are, them kind of dogs are
supremely intelligent, but they have been bred and trained for that role.
Yeah.
Which is where I'm sort of going with this. Airlines, good at accommodating that. The view that they have taken is, unless you meet this very, very, very strict criteria when we're essentially looking at trained support animals, your companion will need to be sedated and put in the hold.
Okay.
That's where animals travel on planes. And there are various individuals in America that have kicked off about this, saying, well, I need my emotional support animal with me. And the airline's response is, well, you don't need to fly.
Oh, it's so woke, isn't it?
So they have written it into, you know, it's now airline policy, airline rules. I can't believe we live in a world where we have to write policies about what emotional support animals can fly on a plane and what can't.
It's painfully woke.
Can you imagine? I mean, economy's bad enough. Can you imagine sitting next to somebody and a little snake like pops its head out of a bag? Can you imagine that? Do you just
trauma?
Know? Like, no.
Not for me.
Not for you. And we can't bend the world around the will and the wishes of one individual. And I saw this unbelievable post. This sounds a bit ranty. I saw this unbelievable post this week, and it was a woman who had her child and she'd taken a selfie in a toilet on an aircraft. They're tiny toilets.
They are.
And she put it out there to say, you know, when will we make aircraft toilets more child friendly? My child finds them terrifying. We're not going to redesign planes because your kid finds plane toilets scary. In there, hold their hand, reassure them, tell them they'll grow out of it and go back to your seat.
It's not meant to be nice.
You know, we can't redesign aeroplanes because your kid finds them a bit intimidating and a bit scary. And this whole concept that somebody wants to fly with their peacock or their baby rhino or whatever it is because, you know, they support them emotionally. Well, maybe aviation travel isn't for you.
No.
Sorry if that's a contentious thing to say these days, but maybe it just isn't. So it's one, we've got the issue of is it reasonable, but also from an animal welfare perspective, these animals haven't been trained or bred generally to be support animals. So whilst it might alleviate your anxiety as a human being, you could be causing immense distress to an animal that typically doesn't want to be cuddled, petted, stroked every time you don't feel very well, because they haven't been bred for or trained for that purpose. So there is that welfare perspective as well, where someone will go pick something up from a pet shop. Do you still buy pets in a pet shop?
You can, yeah. Pets at Home sell guinea pigs.
Yeah.
And rabbits and stuff.
You go buy a guinea pig or a rabbit because it's an emotional support animal, but that animal doesn't know what being a support animal is.
No, you had guinea pigs and rabbits when you were little, surely?
No.
No, you never had one?
German shepherds, mate.
Okay.
That's it's like bait.
Would eat, yeah. Typically, when you pick one up, they just shake anyway.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how you
they don't,
hold
they don't necessarily like human contact.
They're not built for it.
Yeah,
they're
and
not.
Like, there's a place near us where it's a farm, and they breed guinea pigs, and they breed dogs and goats and Shetland ponies, but they're a working farm, and most of the animals will either go out and work on the farm, or they're sold to other farmers, or, you know, people buy them as pets. But in the spring and the summer, you can take your children there, you can pick up the baby animals, and your kids can pet them. I remember taking my niece 18 years ago, and there's the baby rabbits, and they're all in like a little pen running around. My niece pinned one by its throat and picked it up, and she was like, "Look, Auntie Liz." And it's sort of wiggling, you go and put it down, please. And, you know, it's this lovely kind of cuddly environment where they get to go and play and interact with kids. But animals typically don't like being handled.
Worst day of that rabbit's life.
Worst day of that rabbit's
life. Right there, yeah.
Equally for that rabbit, if it then gets snapped up by someone who wants to use it as an emotional support animal, it's probably not going to have a very good life.
No.
So from one animal welfare perspective to a hygiene perspective, there's lots of reasons why, if someone comes into the workplace and requesting an emotional support animal as a reasonable adjustment, we're probably going to say no.
Mm. I mean, I personally think dogs are the only ones that kind of do that job. And people do bring dogs into offices. Like, they've got one here today, I believe. Like, there's one here, and it's nice.
I'd say dogs, it depends, actually. I've got a dog who, if you envelop her in a hug, she leans her body weight against you. She puts her chin over your shoulder. Oh. She engages in the hug.
She knows.
I've then got another one that will kind of go, "What are you doing?" He's okay with being patted. If you enclose him and close your hands, he doesn't like it.
Wiggles.
Yeah, he doesn't like feeling entrapped. Mm-hmm. So you can immediately see the discomfort there.
Yes.
It depends on the animal. You know, some are bred to go into schools where you've got children who've either got behavioural issues and things like that, and they are used as part of the therapy, but they are bred to be held, handled, and maybe not be handled very well. I've got a former colleague who breeds miniature donkeys, which are the most beautiful little animals in the world.
They are
about
things.
This
oh
big,
my
they're
God.
Fluffy. They love a hug. And again, they're fluffy, they're lovely. They love a hug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they're very well handled from being very small. She cares for them very, very well. And, you know, I love seeing pictures of her having a hug with them, and you see the head going over the shoulder and all that sort of stuff. That's very, very different to someone clutching a wiggling guinea pig, because it makes them feel better.
Allah. Just holding it. I am back onto the cat thing. Obviously, I've got a cat.
Mm-hmm.
You would have an absolute hoot at my ChatGPT history because of the things I've asked it regarding cats. It turns out that, like, when a cat purrs, they lay on your chest a lot and they purr. Mm-hmm. Mine does anyway.
It's plotting how to kill you, mate.
No, he likes me. Right, he likes
me. He's working out at which point he can sit on your face and suffocate you.
Maybe. He's a bit little at the minute. But apparently when they sit on your chest and purr, it lowers your blood pressure.
Right.
And since getting the cat, like, I haven't napped in the day before getting the cat for, like, I'm talking 8 years since I was 21. I now nap in the day sometimes, but he has to fall asleep on my chest first.
Yeah.
So there is kind of like, I'm giving weight to her argument here a bit.
Yeah. Has he stopped biting you yet?
Aggressively, yes. Playfully, no.
So your blood pressure's gone down, but anxiety levels have...
Yeah, I've got, like, little bits of finger missing and stuff and, like, scratches there, look and stuff, but... yeah, that's my personal experience. Mm-hmm.
I think what you're saying is you can see where she's coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you're not bringing him to work, Ollie.
No, I won't anyway. No. You don't deserve it. second sort of question to ask. And I actually thought this when you mentioned the doctor. How much weight should we give to the doctor's note in this situation? Is it comparable to presenting a sick note at work?
We definitely have to give weight to the medical professional opinion. We're not going to say that we don't agree with the doctor. It's probably true that having the cats near her helps her to feel better.
That's why she's got them.
It's why she's got them. We're not arguing with that in this situation. It's actually, can we accommodate it? So if we felt she was swinging the lead, and actually...
What's that mean?
You don't know what swinging the lead means?
No.
Okay, if we felt like she's having us on.
Okay.
You right. know, so if we think, you know, this isn't real, she's just trying to get some attention, be disruptive. We don't think that the cats are actually support animals. You know, she's just doing it to be disruptive. We could go and get our own opinion and have her medically assessed. So we could refer her to occupational health and request a specialist opinion in relation to whether or not these emotional support animals do have the intended effect. We may wish to do that referral anyway, because if we're saying that we can't accommodate the emotional support animals, we probably need to look for another crutch for this situation, where we're saying, well, look, we can have welfare meetings with you. We can look at, you know, you working in a different type of space or how we can make you more comfortable at work. We can link you up with virtual counselling. We've got various wellbeing initiatives that we can put in place for you. But we're kind of guessing, you know, being more comfortable at work, is that going to reduce your anxiety? What is it that is raising these anxiety levels? That's the detail that we need from the doctor. That's what we want from the medical professional. So my advice in this situation was, okay, we're going to say no to the cats. However, let's do our own occupational health referral. Let's ask those questions. What is causing the anxiety? What do we think can mitigate it and lower it? What can we actually put in place that's going to help reduce the impact on her? Because it's all very well having a scattergun approach, going, we'll give you an extra cushion and a special chair and you can have extra breaks and you can work in privacy or you can work in a pod if you want the comfort or if you want to adjust your working day. We're guessing. We don't know what is going to help this woman.
The GP might have done that as well.
Or she might have gone in and said, the cats make me feel better. Can you write me a letter?
Yeah, that's exactly what
I was
going to say.
And he could be saying, well, it's report, you know, my patient has reported to me that it helps her anxiety levels. So let's get to the bottom of what's causing those anxiety levels to increase. There's an example that I dealt with this week with someone where they work in a call centre, and every time her phone rang, it was kind of setting her off. So they turned her phone on the phone, there's no sound. It flashes up when there's a call coming through. She's much more chilled at work.
It was the noise.
It was the constant noise all day of that phone ringing. So little things like that. Whereas, you know, if we'd given her a private space to work in a more comfortable chair, it would have had no impact. It's got to be, what are we going to put in place that's actually going to have an impact for this individual where we've got someone who's suffering? And I think that's something that a lot of companies kind of miss. They'll ring me and say, we've got all these wellbeing initiatives. I go, great. How do you know they're going to work? So we had Paul McGregor, who was a guest on one of our previous podcasts, that they're you know, a big advocate of is, we don't just want to tick boxes. We don't just want to say we're a great wellbeing employer because we, you know, let people have pizza on a Friday and yoga on a Wednesday. And what if nobody wants pizza on a Friday and yoga on a Wednesday? You might as well not do it. It's having no impact.
Yes,
so that is where I would say we would use the power of an occupational health or a medical referral here, is to understand, what is it that is triggering the anxiety response with this woman? What can we do to reduce it? And what can we put in place other than the cats?
I mean, you could argue that she got into the position, like, she's kind of in that through like medical nonchalance anyway. You don't know. You say she had depression for so long, but you don't know how the GP handled that or how that was reported and stuff. So I imagine that's quite important.
Potentially,
as well.
I mean, you do. It's something that sometimes that we see is where people, you know, they have the GP appointments, they're getting their medication, they're talking to the doctor, but, you know, in that 8 or 11 minute appointment, how much actual time do they get to talk about what will proactively help them?
Mm.
So having that access to that occupational health, and it's something that I see when we get the comments and some of the trolling that we get on some of the platforms, is people like, occupational health are evil. It's just a way to kind of work you out of your job, you know, and they're sort of like, go to hell, occupational health, and we see all of that. But it can be so powerful for understanding what's causing this individual problems, what is affecting their health, and how can we reduce its impact at work. But it means then they can be a happier, healthier, more productive employee at work. It's in our interest as an employer, but it's also morally and ethically, you know, we're providing a better place of work for somebody who's struggling.
I genuinely would probably trust Occi Health more than a GP. I've often felt like GPs try and rush you out the door.
I think there is that perception. I think it depends, you know.
Depends where you go.
Depends where you go. And, you know, I'm sure there are good occupational health, bad occupational health.
Yes.
But you are more likely, you know, where you've got the private appointment with someone who, you know, depending on how the referral is done, it can either be with, you know, nurse, doctor, specialist, the length of the appointment, whether you're seeing someone who's a specialist, you get more of that kind of choice and tailoring when you're going through occupational health. So I wouldn't necessarily conclusively say one is better than the other, but you are going to get a bit more of that kind of objective view. And we're putting questions to occupational health saying, this is the problem we're trying to solve. This is where we need to engage help, rather than kind of getting that. It's not that it's not a tailored response from the GP. It'll be, this is what the patient's reported. This is what my diagnosis has been. This is the medical history. It doesn't kind of answer the question of, well, how does this apply to the workplace? Because GPs are not occupational specialists.
They don't know about our work.
We're referring to occupational health. Yeah. It's to do with work. And it's that specialism that we're drawing on for how to make adjustments at work, which isn't really for the field of the GP. And most of them will say, it's not my specialty, you need to speak to occupational health and they'll be proactive about that.
In situations like this, staff may feel uncomfortable dealing with their peers directly. How can businesses better train staff to manage these sensitive interactions a bit better?
So equality and diversity training is kind of where this sort of stuff falls into. And I mean, this is something that's really topical at the moment. So we've seen, I think it's McDonald's withdrawing a lot of their DE&I initiatives. I think post-election, you know, certain things at government level being watered down over in the States. Diversity and equality is almost seen too much as a buzzword. And depending on the sector or who you talk to, it kind of goes, oh God, that rubbish again. But actually when, particularly with the training that I deliver, it's not about, you know, the woke argument or pandering or, you know, behaving in a way that means that we're no longer efficient or able to do our jobs. It's about compassion and empathy, that everybody is different. We are human beings, that we recognize that we are a diverse race. As human beings, we are diverse. Two people generally, other than identical twins, are the same. And even identical twins, you've got personality differences, you know, even though the genetic level is identical. That we don't see diversity as a negative thing, that when we have people who have got these differences, that we are celebrating the fact that people are different, because it's what makes humans so amazing. Mm-hmm. And then it's crucial that we treat people equally, and that the workplace is a safe place for people to turn up and work and not fearing for the fact that they might be treated differently because they aren't the same as everybody else. So it's not, you know, about, like I say, a tick box exercise. It's about making sure that people are treating other people in the workplace with compassion and respect. So it's off the back of the harassment stuff that we talk about as well. So we've done loads on sexual harassment, but there's lots of other protected characteristics. So we should never be subjecting someone to unwanted harassment because they're disabled or because of their race or their gender or because of their religion. So we harp on about the sexual harassment stuff so much, one, because it's so topical because of the legislative changes, but we shouldn't be treating anybody poorly because of anything, never mind just because of the protected characteristics. So it's really important from a HR perspective that when somebody comes with a complaint about somebody else, that it's not that we sanitize that complaint, but say if you've got someone who is like, oh, you know, that person again, you know, they're absolutely mental, I can't put up with them. Whoa, hang on.
That's a bit of a strong word.
word. And it's not that we're going to kind of jump on people for saying things that if they've been a bit clumsy, but actually, if you're coming to me because someone's annoying you because they've got traits or personality manifestations that annoy you, well, guess what? People are annoying.
Deal with it.
Deal with it, yeah, in a professional way. Mm-hmm. But if we've got a situation like this where you've got someone who's got an allergy to an animal that someone wants to bring into the workplace, that's a bit different. So our job in HR is, we're almost a bit like a referee. We don't want everything kicking off. We need to be able to manage, you know, where is there a real complaint and a real concern? Where we've got someone who's being unreasonable, or perhaps they're not respecting the fact that we're a diverse workforce, they're not treating people equally and with respect, that we manage that situation, we coach that person, that we talk them down. But if there is a real complaint in there somewhere, that we also deal with that. So we're not just a mouthpiece. We're not taking this person's complaint and going to someone else and saying, you know, Jake said this about you. You know, how would you like me to respond to it? Because we're just going to upset somebody. Yeah. You know, we do also kind of have to be this processing hub where we say, right, okay, so you've come to me with this concern. Let's discuss that in more detail. Let's actually understand what's going on in this situation. Is there anything that actually needs to be done with this, or is it a matter of kind of coaching and supporting you? But where there is something then where someone is either affecting someone else's health and safety at work, or there is bullying or harassment going on, that then there is an investigation and formal processes follow.
Absolutely. Where does harassment for food allergies fall on that?
I mean, it depends. If that food allergy is serious enough, it could potentially be classed as a disability.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not being harassed on the basis of disability, are you?
No, okay.
No.
I'm just thinking, you know.
I mean, if someone wraps up a bag of wheat and gives it to you for Christmas, that might be potentially.
Yeah, I had funnily enough, an old colleague of mine, he's an interesting individual. He thought it was really funny to buy me a box of Weetabix for Secret Santa. I've got gluten intolerance.
Did you re-gift it?
Yeah, I think I gave it back to him. He was behind me. I had two. Everyone else had one. I was looking behind me and he was just giggling. I was like, well, it was obviously you, wasn't it, Will? Oh. Obviously you. He found it very funny. Last question. What accommodations should we make to people who have support animals?
So I suppose we covered this, didn't we, in all the, when I went off on the huge tangent off the first question. if we don't believe that actually this is a reasonable adjustment and it is someone who's having us on, we can go down that route and investigate that. That's always going to be a bit of a riskier kind of attitude to take. If you've got someone, so say if we go away from emotional support animals, if you've got someone who's visually impaired, for example, and has a support dog, or they've got a condition that means that they have a dog, then that's a bit of a different question. So what you often have where you've got places that have a prohibition on animals being granted entry, often there is a caveat with the exception of dogs for the blind and things like that. So it's quite a specialist situation in that scenario that I'd say, you know, it's always one that you want to take legal advice on, probably always, you know, if you're a business where you rent your premises, talk to your landlord, your insurance company and things like that.
I was going to say that. I was just going to bring that up. And
also looking at, you know, what other reasonable adjustments would we need to put in place, particularly if someone has a support animal for varying conditions, the likelihood is that there's going to be other things that you're going to need to do in the workplace in addition to granting animal access for the animal.
Closing thoughts on this one. What happened? What was the result of the investigation?
The cats didn't make it
to the office.
Another day in the office. Oh. We didn't put them down. We just said she couldn't bring them anymore.
Did she stay at the workplace?
She did. Stayed. So we did the occupational health referral. There were a couple of other support things that were put in place. But the cats weren't allowed to come back.
No, I'm not surprised, to be honest.
So yeah, it kind of, I wouldn't say it was a happy ending. The individual did put up a bit of a fight, but ultimately I think we had one person who did have an extremely bad allergy.
In the same office?
In the same office, same space. Yeah. There was nowhere else that we could really put them. And to the point where they'd sort of almost have breathing problems, you know, it was really, really affecting someone else's health and safety to quite a severe extent. So that almost gave us a bit of a get out of jail free card in terms of the line with the cats and how reasonable we were being. But we did go down the route of the occupational health and look at, you know, other ways of supporting her.
Can you digress any of the other ways? Like what?
There haven't been any further problems with them, so they haven't needed my assistance to put them into place. But yeah, that's where we went with it, was down the route of occupational health.
But they didn't need anything put in place?
Oh, no, they did. So whatever the recommendations were, I think they've been able to put them in place.
Oh, but you don't know about it?
No.
Okay. Is that how it normally works?
Yeah, so they'll come to me. So the way my clients work is I will have things that I will run end-to-end for them.
Okay.
Where someone will come, we have this problem, we need hand-holding through every single step. And then I have other clients where actually their HR is super experienced. They're, you know, kind of the HR superheroes. Mm-hmm. And they'll ring me and go, I think I know the answer, just want to check with somebody else to kind of have that kind of sounding board. So it might be something where I go, this is my opinion. Yep, I think you're absolutely bang on the money. Off you go. And I might not hear from them on that problem again. And it's the next time they ring with an emergency, I'm like, ooh, what happened with the cats?
Yeah. I've heard a few of them phone calls.
Yeah, actually. So sometimes I get the feedback about what happened. Sometimes I don't. It depends on what the client's got on. But yeah, it's the varying support levels that we have. Is I can be super involved. And for some businesses, they sort of forget that I'm not on the premises and I'm not part of the team. Others, it's where, you know, HR director, HR manager, who often is working alone at a senior level. They don't really have anyone to bounce things off. I'm that peer support for them, where they kind of go,
like a coach.
Yeah. And almost, actually, they're the ones that where we get often the really good stuff. It tends to be the more unusual stuff where someone hasn't dealt with it before, or where they'll kind of ring and go, you'll never guess what, this is one for the podcast. And I kind of get the really good stories that
We've
way.
We've never had this before. Yeah. I've heard a few of them come in.
Yeah.
We're about at time, aren't we, though? It was a good one.
It was.
Good one.
Yeah.
There weren't many like questions compared to others. There weren't like many questions to ask, but this was more of a discussion piece.
And I think because it was a bit of an unusual scenario, it wasn't necessarily a difficult answer, but there was lots of kind of themes that it brings out around, you know, disability, discrimination, reasonable adjustments, competing interests between staff. So yeah, it's good chat.
Anything you want to add before we sign off?
No, that we've taught you what swinging the lead means.
Oh yeah.
There's a win.
I learn new metaphors every day around like you and Michael, which makes you sound a lot older than I am, but you're not. You're not, are you, really?
No, we're not.
With a similar sort of generation.
But the generational divide couldn't be any wider.
Oh, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Thanks for your time, everyone. Like, comment, subscribe.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER at heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.